We now begin Maseches Beitza. This is Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, 1-1. Now, this Mishnah will have two separate cases, one totally unrelated to the other. What puts them together, and really in truth, in addition to these two cases, the case of the next Mishnah, is that in almost all circumstances, when there's a machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the halacha isn't just like Beis Hillel, but also Beis Hillel is also the more lenient of the opinions. Very rarely is it that Beis Hillel is the strict opinion and Beis Shammai the lenient. However, there are three cases in all of Seder Moed in which Beis Hillel ends up becoming more strict than Beis Shammai, and they find themselves here in our first Kalvil Mishnayos of Maseches Beitza. So the first Mishnah here refers to the egg which is laid on Yom Tov that immediately follows a Shabbos, meaning Yom Tov falls out on a Sunday. And the Mishnah simply reads, let me read it to you, it's very short. It says, Beitza Shnolda B'Yom Tov, when you have an egg laid on Yom Tov, and it's the case again that it follows the Shabbos on that Sunday, Beis Shammai Omrim Te'achel, Beis Shammai hold the egg may be eaten, Ubeis Hillel Omrim Lo Se'achel, Beis Hillel says, no, it may not be eaten. That's the whole first part of the Mishnah, that's the din. Now, what's the case and what's driving this Mishnah? First of all, I have to confess to you, this Mishnah is, in fact, very complex when one brings in the different shittas in the Gemara, as well as the Rishonim. I'm going to navigate just with the Bar Tanura here in what is essentially, I hope, the simplest, most straightforward approach to get to the heart of the Mishnah and the primary issue, and we'll leave it to another day to address all the other approaches in the Gemara, as well as quite a lot of discussion in the Rishonim of side points and details. But the main point here, when we talk about an egg laid on Yom Tov, or in truth on Shabbos, what probably jumps straight into your mind is the category of muktza called nolad, something which has come into creation and first exists on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Don't let that happen. Don't do that. Don't go there. That's not the nub of the issue here. Our Mishnah is not about muktza and nolad. Even if that comes into play as a side issue, it's not the core issue. The core issue is something totally unrelated. It's the issue of hachana, of preparation for Shabbos or Yom Tov, which must be done prior to Shabbos Yom Tov, and which may not be done on Shabbos for Yom Tov, or on Yom Tov for Shabbos. That would be prohibited, and in fact prohibited mid-Doraisa. So we're talking about lahalacha, a Doraisa issue, a Torah prohibition of preparing on Shabbos for Yom Tov, or vice versa. So the basic issue here is Beis Hillel holds that an egg laid on Yom Tov, which falls out on a Sunday, the day after Shabbos, may not be eaten by dint, by force of an Isser Doraisa. And there'll be some Derabbanans around that. And Beis Shammai say, not true, there's no such Doraisa. What makes Beis Hillel say there's Doraisa? Because Beis Hillel has a pasuk. In fact, he has two pasukim, two verses. And Beis Hillel understands that these verses in combination, as according to how Rabbah and the Gemara understands them, makes this a double or two-faceted Isser Doraisa. One pasuk says, this is the pasuk in Shmos, Perek Tes Zayin, pasuk Hey, 16:5. The context of the pasuk is referring to the man, the food in the desert. And it says, V'haya b'yom ha-shishi, on the sixth day, meaning a regular non-Shabbos day prior to Shabbos, V'hechinu es asher yaviu. That's when you shall prepare that which you bring in. So the time to prepare your food for Shabbos is on a Yom Chol, a regular day on a Friday, before Shabbos comes in. That's one pasuk. There's a second pasuk in pasuk Chav Gimel, verse 23 of the same chapter, which says, Eis asher tofu eifu, whatever you have to bake, you will bake. Ves asher tevashlu bashelu, that which you have to cook, you will cook on that day which precedes Shabbos. Now, Beis Hillel understand that since you have two separate psukim, which seem to be saying the same requirement of food preparation to occur prior to Shabbos on the Friday, the whole day, that there's two separate facets to that requirement midoraisa. One is that you may not do your food preparation on Shabbos proper for Yom Tov, or in Yom Tov for Shabbos, rather, you have to do your preparations for Shabbos prior to Shabbos on a Yom Chol, a regular day of the week, not Yom Tov. But that is just one of the psukim. The second pasuk, since it can't be telling the same thing again, is telling you not only that if you're doing human baking or human cooking, the preparation must occur on a Yom Chol, a regular day prior to Shabbos or Yom Tov, but also that even Hachana B'dei Shamayim, preparations that occur through natural processes, literally preparations done through the hands of heaven, but natural processes, those also can't be done, those natural processes can't occur, according to Beis Hillel, on a Shabbos on behalf of a subsequent, the next day being a Yom Tov, nor could they occur on a Yom Tov if the next day is a Shabbos. And that would make it Asur D'oraisa. And now since, as Rabbah explains in the Gemara, the time it takes to prepare an egg inside a chicken is how much lasts from already the day before the egg is laid, already it's been formed inside the chicken. Maybe not the shell on the outside, but certainly the egg on the inside has been already is there. So by the egg being, I'll call it manufactured, being made inside the chicken on the day before Yom Tov, if the day before Yom Tov is a Shabbos, that means that at least Bidei Shemaim, through the hands of heaven, you have food being prepared in the egg-making factory called the chicken on Shabbos for the next day, Yom Tov. And that's forbidden. Beis Shammai holds, no, that isn't prohibited. Hachana Bidei Shemaim, done from before Yom Tov on a Shabbos, is not prohibited. But Beis Hillel say, yes, it is prohibited. That's the core issue. And that's like the main takeaway of the Mishnah. Now, as far as the Muktzah issue goes, so first of all, the case has to be, there may be a Muktzah issue here, there may be multiple Muktzah potential issues here, but first of all, the case has to be one in which the chicken which laid this egg was a designated chicken for food, for consumption. You're potentially going to eat that chicken. And that being the case, since one is, yes, permitted to slaughter a chicken on Yom Tov, so if before Yom Tov comes in, he already says, that's my chicken for Shechtein Yom Tov, that makes the chicken not be a Muktzah chicken. And the egg, being a part of the chicken, is not Muktzah in as much as the chicken is not Muktzah. Assuming it's food and edible, it's not Muktzah at all. Now, the problem is, perhaps, if the egg can't be eaten because it's forbidden, okay, so then maybe by the by it becomes Muktzah because it's not food. But that's just a side point. Essentially, it's not a Muktzah issue at all. And that's the case of our Mishnah here, where you have a chicken that was designated ahead of time for consumption. That's clear, says the Gemara, because otherwise, if we were talking about the Muktzah issue, we'd have the chicken being Muktzah as much as the egg. That's not what we're talking about here. That neither chicken nor egg are Muktzah per se, at least not, that's not the essential issue. It's just a question of Hachana Bidei Shamayim. Beis Hillel will say, that is a problem, and therefore it would be Asur D'oraisa to eat such an egg laid on the Sunday, which is Yom Tov, because the preceding day is Shabbos, and Beis Hillel says it's a problem, and Beis Shammai says not a problem. The same would go on the other way around. If the Yom Tov was the day before Shabbos, because again you'd have Hachana happening on Yom Tov for Shabbos, equally being forbidden, it's just that we don't go there with the Gemara in the case of the Mishnah, because since you wouldn't normally eat a raw egg, so eggs laid on Shabbos anyway is sort of out of bounds, because who eats raw eggs? So they kind of, it's nice to become Muktzah, or you'd have to sort of suck up the juice of the egg in its raw state, which is not a thing, presumably. So that's where we go with the Yom Tov after Shabbos scenario. Now the truth is, as the Bar Tanur explains, the halacha is going to be like Beis Hillel, and it's going to actually apply not only if Yom Tov falls on a Sunday, but if Yom Tov falls on any day of the week, an egg laid on that Yom Tov is going to be considered to be out of bounds, forbidden to be eaten. But that's midrabanan. It's a midrabanan lest one come to ultimately eat eggs laid on Yom Tov that comes out on a Sunday, since people eat newly laid eggs on Yom Tov on Tuesdays that are, you know, if Yom Tov falls on a Tuesday, so then they'll come to eat it another year on a Sunday, and therefore the rabbi said, no, we're simply not eating eggs that are laid on Yom Tov, lest someone to violate the Isra Doraisa of eating an egg laid on a Yom Tov that came out on the day immediately after Shabbos. The only one exception to this would be, just want to make it clear, is in Chutz La'aretz, when you have 2 days of Yom Tov back-to-back, leaving Rosh Hashanah out of things, but the other 5 days of Yom Tov in the year where there's a Yom Tov Sheinu Shagolios, you have a second day of Yom Tov. So since only one of those days are really Yom Tov Midoraisa and the second is the Rabbanan, you have a Mamanashach, you have, like, however you look at it, at least one of the 2 days was a Yom Chol Midoraisa, and therefore the second day when the egg is around and laid, for sure, it's going to be okay, because either today was Yom Chol Midoraisa or yesterday was Yom Chol Midoraisa, and therefore it's going to be okay, says the Bar Tanur, on the second day of Yom Tov Shel Golius. But normally Yom Tov laid on the first day of an egg, laid on the first day of Yom Tov will be forbidden under all circumstances, whether Doraisa directly after Shabbos or Durban any other day of the week. That's the first case of the Mishnah. Second case of the Mishnah has nothing to do with, you know, our Masechta, really. It belongs in truth back in Maseches Pesachim. It just is set forth here because it's another case where you have the halacha not just being like Beis Hillel, but being like Beis Hillel l'chumra in a strict approach. So again, I'll read you the words of the Mishnah. They're very simple, and then I'll explain what's going on over here. The Mishnah says, "Beis Hillel omrim, Beis Hillel also." Excuse me, Beis Shammai omrim, Beis Shammai hold. So'or b'kazayis v'chametz b'kosevis. The threshold for liability when it comes to so'or, which I'll define in a moment, is a kazayis, an olives amount, but for chametz, it's a kosevis. Kosevis is the size of a date. And Beis Hillel say no. Beis Hillel omrim ze veze bekazayis. Beis Hillel say, in both cases, the threshold is a kazayis, an olives amount, both for so'or and for chametz. So what are we talking about over here? We are not, first let me define the terms. So'or is sourdough. It's a leavening agent. Sometimes so'or is translated as yeast. That's terrible. Yeast is not forbidden on Pesach at all. The yeast you buy, like a yeast cube you buy from the refrigerated section inside the supermarket, it's not chametz. You can have it in your refrigerator all of Pesach, no problem. But in the time of Chazal, you couldn't buy yeast from the grocery store in a refrigerator. Where'd you get your yeast from to ferment and cause your dough to rise? You got it from yesterday's dough. You set aside a piece of the dough from yesterday's bread. You leave it out for the next day, and after a whole day, it's begun to ferment severely, and it's become what I'll call sourdough, right? And then you make your new sourdough bread using not just today's batch of dough, but you introduce yesterday's piece of sourdough to make the whole batch of dough rise at this time. So the sourdough is the source of your yeast. But the point is that the sourdough, of course, is very over-leavened bread. And that means that there are going to be two categories of foods which are prohibited on Pesach. One's called chametz. That's edible food, which is made out of one of the five grains, wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. The flour is mixed with water, left to rise. That's leavened. It's chametz, is forbidden, but it's edible. If you leave something like that to the point where it's no longer edible, it's not food anymore, but it's still useful as a leavening agent to ferment your new dough, that's called sa'or. And that sa'or, that sourdough, is also prohibited on Pesach. Now, prohibited for what? There are two separate things we're going to consider. There's two separate, I'm oversimplifying for a second here, but there's two separate categories. One is the prohibition of eating, and another is the prohibition of possession. The truth is that possession actually comprises two separate lavin, bal yirah and bal yimatze, but I don't get into that right now. You can neither eat nor even possess chametz, two separate prohibitions, and similarly, you can neither eat nor possess so'or, leaven. Now, everyone's going to agree, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai will agree, that the prohibition of eating so'or or eating chametz, the threshold for culpability, meaning lashes, or it's worth that it's even karis and lashes, is a kazayis, an olives volume. And that's because the definition of achila, of eating in the Torah, is to consume an olives amount of food in a specific amount of time. So every time you have a prohibition of eating, all the prohibitions of the Torah that revolve around eating always will include eating a kazayas amount of food. Whenever you have other things, like for example on Yom Kippur, we talk about, we're back to the kosevis, the date size. When you talk about on Shabbos carrying, we talk about a gregaris. That's because we're not talking about eating. In the case of Yom Kippur, the problem is inui, of like affliction and you know, assuaging your hunger. And that requires perhaps more than just eating alone, more than a kazayas. Similarly on Shabbos, we talk about the threshold of how much is significant to carry. That's because while an act of eating might simply be eating one kazayas, but it's not a significant amount of food until you have a larger piece of food, like a dried fig or gregaris. Okay. In any case, so that's not a machlokas, and that's not our mission's case at all. Our mission wants to talk about the prohibition of possession. Bal yira'e, bal yimatze. In bal yira'e, the prohibition against possessing chametz and possessing sa'or is repeated in a rather ostensibly superfluous, you know, repetitious way. The pasuk says, reading now here in Shmos, Perek Yud Gimel, pasuk Zayin, it says, "Lo yireh lecha chametz, v'lo yireh lecha sa'or b'chol gvulecha." You may not, I'll translate loosely here, see or loosely possess chametz, and you may not possess sa'or, sourdough, in your boundaries. So, the fact that we have a double identification of two separate things, that sort of repetitious language, and actually it's even more repetitious than that. So, there's another pasuk that says, Shivas yam sa'or lo'e matzeh b'vateichem, etc. But the point is, what I said before is enough, that according to Beis Hillel, that tells you that there are two separate shiurim, two separate thresholds regarding bal yira'e, possession. And since chametz is in a way, the food that you eat is in a way like less intense, less concentrated, if you will, than sa'or, because sa'or, a leavening agent, you know, you just throw a little bit in and it works. For chametz, it's like less intense, it's, you know, it's food. So Beis Hillel hold that when it comes to possession, sa'or, the threshold is a kazayas, whereas chametz proper, it's a little larger, it's a kosevis. The next kosevis is a dates volume, it's like the next incremental step up in terms of the volumes of the Torah. Halacha will be like Beis Hillel, I apologize. Beis Shammai, who are lenient, say that they're two separate shiurim, and therefore the chametz, which is less intense, the threshold for ownership, is more lenient because it's less intense, so it goes up to kosevis, whereas Beis Shammai hold that when it comes to possession of the more intense or, it's just a smaller kazayas. And Beis Hillel say, no, they're equal. The you learn from the shiurim, the amounts when of consumption, of eating, equally to possession, therefore both sa'or and chametz, the threshold for possession is one kazayas. Now, threshold for what? This is actually machlokes rishonim. If we're talking about threshold for culpability, some learn that you are not allowed to own even less than a kazayas, like Beis Hillel, of either sa'or or chametz. But if you do own less than a kazayas, well, it's prohibited by the Torah, because we say a chatzi shir is aser midoraisa. You're not allowed to have even, the Torah says you can't own it, you can't even, you know, even less than the threshold amount, but you won't be culpable to punishment of lashes. Many, or perhaps most other Rishonim, say no, that can't be the pshat here, because for a technical reason, since the owning of chametz is called a lav hanitik la'aseh, it's a prohibition which is remedied by a mitzvah aseh, a positive commandment. There's a positive commandment to do beer, to get rid of your chametz that you own. So since, if one did own it, and since there's a remedy with a positive commandment of destroying the chametz, so and so or, so therefore there's never going to be lashes. There's never lashes for a lav hanitik la'aseh. And that being the case, according to those who are shown him, the threshold we're talking about here is simply the threshold for the Torah's prohibition, that owning, possessing less than a kazayas of chametz or sa'or is not a problem. The problem is once you hit the threshold of a kazayas, both for chametz or seor, and that will be essentially the halacha l'maisa.